and could manage any business. Eisner, by contrast, had proven programming abilities, and owning NBC would also guarantee an outlet for Disney-produced entertainment, which had always been the primary strategic rationale for Disney to own a network. When they met for dinner, Welch said he wasn't yet willing to sell NBC outright, but he was prepared to offer Disney creative control of the network and a 49% interest with an option to later acquire more. And he wanted to give Bob Wright at least 2 more years to turn the network around. The proposed deal appealed to the bargain hunter in Eisner. He figured he could gain creative control of a network for just half the cost of buying it all and secure an outlet for Disney-produced programming. And while he wasn't thrilled with the idea of keeping Wright, he admired Welch for standing behind him. But after dinner, when Eisner presented the proposal to Sid Bass at Bass's Manhattan apartment, Bass was cool. "I don't think it's favorable," he said of the terms, which pretty much drained the room of any enthusiasm. Half the risk meant half the reward. The next morning, Eisner called Welch. "The answer to the proposal is an unequivocal no." Welch laughed. Still, Eisner felt a sense of disappointment and letdown. Buying NBC would have given Disney a shot in the arm, Eisner felt, at a time both he and the company needed it. The very next day, Eisner met with his strategic planning advisors to discuss progress on Disney's America, the ambitious theme park project planned for Northern Virginia. Peter Rummel showed him new financial analyses that projected that the venture would operate at a loss. After the Euro Disney experience with cold weather, the operating season in Northern Virginia was cut back to 8 months, and attendance estimates were slashed. As at Euro Disney, costs had soared. The Imagineers, as usual, had introduced new attractions and expanded and upgraded others. But more worrying, opponents of the venture, many of them wealthy neighbors with influence in Washington, had succeeded in turning the theme park area into a historical and environmental cause célèbre. Although the site was actually 5 miles from the Civil War Manassas battlefield, the public perception was that Disney would be defiling sacred ground. Prominent American historians rallied in opposition. A group called Protect Historic America took out a full-page ad in the New York Times calling Eisner the man who would destroy American history. Eisner seemed genuinely surprised that Disney would be derided as much as admired for its values. As he told the Washington Post, "I thought we were doing good. I expected to be taken around on people's shoulders." Disney had the support of the Virginia governor and legislature, but the issue was no longer who was right or wrong, Eisner finally decided. We had lost the perception game. So after hearing Rummel's projections, Eisner pulled the plug on Disney's America, at least for the time being. He insisted publicly that, "I have no intention of giving up on a historical park permanently." Though he had yet to break the news to the Disney board, word of the decision soon leaked, and Eisner had to rush 2 of Rummel's deputies to deliver the news to the Virginia governor before he read about it in the Washington Post, which ran the story on its front page the next day. The decision to scrap Disney's America, widely perceived as a defeat for Disney, seemed uncharacteristic of the combative Eisner, and many at the company wondered if this was a new, post-surgery Eisner. Eisner himself noted that he hadn't fully regained his